resources that are provided to a development, those would definitely trigger this resolution for certain. Softer resources, such as an abatement, that's something, again, that we would want to correspond with BHCD and PDC about to see if there is an appropriate venue to do that.
No, I am one who favors bright lines, even if I disagree with them. But as we know, for example, there's an ongoing debate about what's the trigger for prevailing wage residential versus commercial rates, for example, in construction, and that's a live debate. So I think as we develop the rules, we want to think about what's the minimum, what's the floor in terms of contribution? Is it maybe two PSH units in a building that otherwise is market? Does that trigger? And then so there's probably a de minimis or a floor that triggers. And then defining clearly what are the hard financing mechanisms which trigger the language. And I'm sure the folks you're going to be talking to at BHCD, which is my bureau, PDC, and elsewhere will have a lot of good thinking on that subject.
If I could echo on that, the concept is aligned with what you are describing, and I see it as related to that waiver question as well. So certainly defining a bright line and saying, look, from all practical purposes, below this or these kinds of situations, it's not worth applying. It might relate to that question as well. But yes, that would be only PDC and BHCD specifying what those elements are and coming back and reporting to your satisfaction on that.
Great. And I think that is probably an easier task than the related task, which is to put some content on the notion of the trigger for remodeling, upgrading, or replacement. Mm-hmm. I think that one's going to be harder because how much of a remodel would trigger a SEPTED requirement, and is it limited to the area that's being remodeled, or does it trigger the whole development, and what's the mechanism? That strikes me as being even more challenging.
Actually, it may be, but our perception is that one's actually, if anything, less challenging, because we were very specific in here compared to the, for example, ADA requirements. Until your property's up to ADA, you have to spend X percentage of the investment on ADA and that type of thing. We didn't want to apply that here. The requirement here is simply when that specific thing is being remodeled. So if you're replacing the doors, then the new doors going in have to buy viewers.
Or if you're remodeling the laundry room.
If you're remodeling the laundry room, put a window in it. Yeah, that type of thing. But it's only for that specific element. So it's not it's not like other development funding triggers that says once you spend X, then you're going to have to do these things on these other areas that you wouldn't have touched otherwise. No, it's very specifically, if you're remodeling something that is directly covered by the resolution, then, yeah, when you redo the laundry room or you're going to place it somewhere else, now let's talk about making sure there's visibility.
So I know that's the concept. This is very basic, but so just so I understand the way this would work, if you did a remodel and BDS would not give you the permit until you had presented some kind of plan that indicated you understood that SEPTEV was required to be integrated into what you're doing along with everything else?
Actually, a little differently from that one, because it's PDC or BHCD would say, before we fund that remodel, we want to see a plan that does those elements.
I see, specific to
the
public.
It's just specific to the public investment.
And I'm going to ask you a question that's a rhetorical question. I know the answer, but I think it's helpful for our audience to know how you would answer this question, which is what would you say to people who wonder why are we singling out just this one area of multifamily housing, for example, which is the publicly subsidized housing? Are we somehow saying that the folks who live there are more prone to crime and these kinds of things than people who live in non-subsidized housing? And it's meant to give you an opportunity to knock that down.
Yeah, and let me say, and others can respond as well, let me say very clearly, I consult with both types of housing, and none of us are here to say that publicly funded housing is in worse shape or is more crime problems or those types of things. Yeah, I'm not going to argue that it's necessarily better consistently either, but it's a chance for leadership, a chance for the city to say, we think these are important, let's demonstrate that this is simple to implement and makes sense for anything that we are publicly funding so that we're not, so that it doesn't raise our expenses at a later date and that type of thing. Let's demonstrate that so it makes it easier and raises the argument to do it in privately funded housing as well. If we could have done the same thing as easily for privately funded multifamily housing, I would absolutely say it would be a no-brainer that we would be arguing that as well here right now today. It's no statement here about an issue with publicly funded housing being a problem, but it's about leadership by example and saying let's show the best of what we can be. I hope I've knocked that one down as you requested. But
thank you.
Yeah.
So this is a binding resolution, and it's very expansive in what it would call for. And there's a fair amount of work still to be done that will return to council. Is that right?
That's correct. It would be only reporting back to council in 6 months' time. And also, I would add that...
What are they reporting back on exactly?
The implementation steps that they're going to be working out with PDC and BHCD.
Does it make sense to do some pilot work first before we... I mean, it seems to me we want to try some of this stuff out, and that's one question. The other question is, I think we have 100 and... In terms of current dwellings in the city of Portland, it's like over 130 or something, and we permit about 2,000 new ones a month, probably none for the past couple of months. So I go back to the existing sort of dwelling issue and then the calls for service and sort of frequent calls to existing dwellings where nothing has happened. I would be interested in your thoughts on coming up with one pilot is to work with the most frequent calls for service where we might have done a SEPTEP analysis and nothing happened, and then also other aspects of this that we could pilot before we finalize the implementation rules.
Well, the way the resolution is written right now, we actually went back 2 years to find if this had been implemented 2 years ago, how many properties would be affected? And we found actually it was only 12.
For new construction.
For new construction, exactly. And it was following in that we actually approached this as a pilot project, and then built into that 6 months after reporting, we can certainly accommodate some of the interests that you're describing.
You went back and did a forensic sort of analysis of how many units would be sort of covered.
How many properties.
Now, how is that a pilot?
Well, no, I'm sorry. What we're looking at, what we're proposing right now would be, in essence, a pilot project because we're keeping this narrow scope and we're reporting back on it in 6 months to gauge its effectiveness.
Oh, I thought you were coming back to us with implementation. Rules within the next 6 months.
Yeah, I think we are coming back, we being a very broad term, but coming back within 6 months with an implementation plan saying here's what's been worked out with that and reporting back from that standpoint.
But between now and when that implementation plan comes back, are we going to have four new developments and four existing development retrofits pilot how your emerging rules would actually, to inform the emerging rules?
I guess I'm not following. Are you wondering if these rules are really useful or valid and so we need to test those more? I'm not quite understanding which part you want to pilot.
Let me just say what my take on this is. You do this, you come up with some implementation rules. This is a sort of a vision document. You come up with implementation rules how to achieve these goals. Ideally, we pilot them before we broadly require it on all future city buildings or buildings in which the city has investments in. And you do some pilots on some new construction types of implementation, and then some retrofit where we're getting significant calls for service as well. And on the retrofit, I mean, I'm interested in streamlining your ability to require improvements on existing buildings and retrofits, but I don't want to do that broadly until we've sort of tried it out on a few, both, again, new construction and existing construction.
I don't know about Stephanie, but I think on the issue of a chronic calls for service location and then this intervention that we do together, that we need to chew on that issue a little bit, because I would hate to have as a consequence of the fear of being penalized for not implementing the recommendations, that people find a way to avoid having that survey done. And then to really...
I want to clarify, if I could, Chief, what I'm saying is there's the people that call you up voluntarily. That's no penalty. They do that. I'm talking about where we get called out, where our police officers are repeatedly called out to the same locations that your folks believe improvements in the environment would reduce crime. So I separate those. Voluntary bring people in, the SEPTEP people in, versus we're spending a lot of money going back to the same place because it's poorly designed, poorly lit.
One of the things I'm talking to you folks as this was progressing is that already ONI's crime prevention does a number of voluntary assessments, both for new construction and remodeling.
Yes, about 100 a year.
So yeah. We already have a number of examples how it works in both. In fact, I think, is it Havala? Could you come forward? Because I think you have a very interesting story to tell about one specific example and what the effect was. Because, yes.
Before we take her testimony, can we just nail down? I don't want to lose the track, because he's raised an issue that I'm interested in, but maybe for a different reason. Can I pursue that trail before
sure.
we? So Commissioner Adams has asked a couple of questions, which now I guess I'm confused about just the timeline. So if we were to adopt this today, at what point would the administrative rules be worked out? What's your timeline to work out the rules before this is implemented? How long would it take you to get the rules hammered out?
I think the answer is 6 months.
Within
okay.
6 months.
I'm sorry, I confused that because I misunderstood the initial question.
All right, so that means that in 6 months, you would be coming back to us with a set of rules, and if there's we could ask you to come back in 6 months with those rules. If there's some heartburn in the community, we could discuss it and give you some feedback. If not, it would then at some point after the 6 months, you would then phase this in, correct? And now to Commissioner Adams's point about a pilot, my sense is that engaging the conversation, I'm not fixed on this, but my sense is that if we have a flexible waiver strategy, and the waiver is really an honest waiver, that in effect that will work like a pilot regulator. It will take certain development out of the equation because of the cost factor, leaving others. But the reality is, what I'm overall concerned about is I'm not sure how much development there's going to be to test this anyway. So to the question about a pilot, I'm concerned that we may end up in 6 months have these rules, we may test them, and there may not be much many cranes in the air for a year thereafter if the economy doesn't improve. So, but I would say that, from my point of view, the waiver actually could perform a very useful role in separating out which projects this would apply to. And my guess is that it wouldn't cover that many in the short term unless there's an incredible rebound of our economy and the credit markets.
I think that's absolutely correct.
Well, I have more to learn on this, but my interest in this is reducing calls for service. And it might be the easiest thing as new construction is built, but I'd be willing to bet that as a percentage, new construction, just because of modern-day design, is probably just organically probably better, not always, but I would say a higher percentage of new construction might be better than the percentage of old construction. Since the vast majority of city is going to remain existing construction, I'm interested in sort of the reverse engineering of calls for service, some calls, repeat calls for service, locations of repeat calls for service have nothing to do with the environment, physical environment. Could have something to do with the way they're operated. It could have some other reasons. Who knows? But I'm interested in that piece of this as well.
if I may offer, during this process, one of the ideas, and there is some ideas developed around what to do with existing property and looking at, you don't go to people who already have their, you know, whether it's a single family home, a duplex, or multifamily, and saying, oh yeah, those were the codes in place then, but now you got to do something different. But there was some discussion about how to incent that and how to make those things happen. I would, and there's some interesting concepts with that. I wouldn't do those at all instead of this resolution. I think this is a good baseline, a good beginning step. I think that's certainly a discussion that can be held as well. Some very interesting ideas came through that process, and I agree would make a substantial difference to the city, and not just calls for service. I mean, yes, on the calls for service police side and also on the general livability and feelings of safety side, which should go hand in hand.
So. Well, we find plenty of property owners for grass is too tall, paint is peeling, and I believe that whatever we can do on the chronic nuisance side relating to protecting people's lives and property, it should be just as fair but as easy and hard as grass that's tall and peeling paint. That's my point. I can get excited about this if I know it's going to be used where it's needed most and in a pretty straightforward way. If it's more of a feel-good policy, that's good too. And new construction, it's always good to improve upon it. I don't think our biggest problem is new construction. I think it's the existing city.
Well, go ahead, John.
Well, yeah, I want to say that there are city-funded properties that we built in the last 15 years that didn't have some of these things that are then looking at some issues associated with that. And so this is simply saying, let's make sure that our properties going forward are always an example of that. There are also many city-funded properties that do a great job with all of these issues. This is simply saying, let's make sure that we're always an example of the best way to do that. And to insert SEPTED into the conversation more rigorously, but to suggest that this is, I think I speak for all of us. We see this as a great way, a first step to get that conversation going. But exactly what you're talking about is,
I'm miscommunicating. I'm talking about the non-city properties.
Well, and I think that Havel's experience with our enhanced safety properties in North Portland is, I think, a very good illustration of this. These were all pre-existing properties. Some of them were publicly funded. Some of them were not. Multiple different income levels living in these properties. And Havel has been working with these folks for close to 3 years now, and they've really experienced a dramatic difference in their properties through the combination of the SEPTED improvements, the management improvements, and the resident organizing. And Havel, I don't know if you want to speak to what their experience has been.
Yeah, and I think it may touch on one of your concerns as well about piloting, because part of our program, in fact, it's a three-phase program, but the second phase is doing a SEPTED. And so we actually have piloted this SEPTED at those properties. And again, some of them were Housing Authority of Portland properties. Some of those are privately owned. So we had, you know, a mixture of, you know, backgrounds. Some of them have mixed use, mixed levels working, or mixed income levels at the properties. And it's been very successful. But I think you're right. And that's part of one of the things that we've worked on with those chronic nuisance properties is this program that we're doing is not just for, you know, problem locations, but we do it with all properties. Any landlord that wants to work with us in trying to make their community safer, we're going to work with them on this. And so we've used that SEPTED component as a, you know, like I said, the second piece of it, and it's really made a dramatic difference at those properties. And again, all of those are built properties, you know, so we didn't have those starting from the beginning. We do SEPTEDs for some of I've done them on request from private developers to public in the past, just in our regular, you know, meeting them at neighborhood associations. But this program is, I think, kind of a piece of both of that. It's piloted our SEPTED, and it's also it's really addressed those chronic properties or those chronic nuisance properties that we've had, as well as working with other properties that don't have problems on a really, truly prevention-based program where we're working with properties to help make them safer.
By the way, just to clarify something, this council has from time to time sought either the Housing Authority of Portland or a nonprofit to take over a troubled development that was done without any public resources. And that's why there are developments, properties on the portfolios of both the Housing Authority of Portland and some of our nonprofits, which are troubled. But one of the things that we're going to have to think about going forward is we don't want to have SEPTEP become a deterrent for some either public or nonprofits assuming the management of some of these troubled buildings, because you obviously would not want a scenario where the housing authority, at our suggestion or direction, takes over a troubled development and then is told, oh, by the way, you're out of compliance with SEPTED. Or at least people need to understand that there's going to be a need for resources to actually be put into these to meet these goals.
Yeah. I would just say emphatically that those are the kinds of scenarios that we were very careful with this resolution, that there shouldn't be a sting or a gotcha associated with that. And that is where the waiver concept comes in. And it really is. This is the kinds of things that typically builders think of are expensive from a crime prevention standpoint are much more invasive than these kinds of things. You know, building, I don't know, what closed circuit surveillance systems or those kinds of things, which I generally would never recommend or very rarely recommend. This is a question of, yes, once the housing authority takes over a property, if they're going to now replace all the doors, then we're going to look at, can you put in eye viewers? But if that looks like it's going to substantially increase costs, it's a little bit of a hypothetical that I don't think would be true. I think the housing authority consistently does these things because they know they're valuable. So,
you know,
yes, that kind of protection should be already in place with the way we wrote this, because that was so important not to make it a barrier from that standpoint.
One of the elements when you talk about troubled property is that usually you can look at one of three or all three elements, and one is it's been poorly managed. Two is that they have problem tenants, and so the tenants really aren't engaged in helping maintain a safety. And then the third is SEPTED. So it can be any one or all of those combinations when you're looking at a troubled piece of property. Outside of the physical construction, that is, it's poorly made, regardless of SEPTED. Those are the three elements that you would look at to try to correct. And unfortunately, in the city of Portland, we can only go so far with that third one, SEPTED, is that we can change management. We can evict tenants that aren't cooperating. But when it gets down to ensuring that that housing unit is safe by SEPTED standards, which is a known factor in terms of reducing the crime, the potential for crime, that to me is the essential part of what we're discussing today, is it? And coming back in 6 months is that there's many years of actual testing of this product. It's the process and making sure that the process is fair and meets the needs of the city council and the community and the development community, I think is, and we've got 6 months to work that out.
Can I just add, I think that's an interesting concept. I think we need to discuss it more in terms of...
Which concept?
The concept of chronic nuisance locations and implementation of the SEPTED principles, and have a dialogue about what seems to be the impediments. Is it just resistance on the part of management? Is there a cost element? So I think we can have that dialogue and then come forward with a recommendation, and maybe the chronic nuisance ordinance can be modified to have the capacity to do the work, because I think this issue is much more broad than just multiple family dwellings. I can think of grocery stores and convenience stores.
Absolutely.
And taverns and that have issues that really are broader and often as persistent as the ones we're describing today.
Honestly, I mean, we started with a much larger vision, and the feedback was only so many stakeholders at a time. And let's get this on the table. Let's prove with our city funding housing, very frankly, in our view, very easy way to prove this and elevate the argument, so that when it comes time to say, can we change code so that we do it in private sector housing, which takes a little longer, and prove that and take the lead on that, we have created the argument for that. And it's in a sense a beginning, or the concept is this, could this be a beginning of introducing these kinds of concepts, just the way fire codes have been introduced over the last 100 years. We all know what a fire hazard is, but not many know what a crime hazard is. And so this is seen as a step, and a good one, but I couldn't agree with you more on the issues that you're talking about as far as how can we, happy to talk about those issues as well, just conceptually.
So I'll summarize from my point of view. I'm interested in hearing about the enforcement of this. So you've stated that in terms of how do you provide fairness and the ability of people to respond to concerns, but then if they don't, what's a reasonable, after a reasonable timeline, a reasonable request, then how do we make it happen? Because again, if you believe in these principles, it means that we're letting something dangerous to property and life continue that could be a lot more dangerous than a lot of other things we currently fine property owners for. That's one thing. The second thing is, though, we have limited resources. And so how do you prioritize? How do we be proactive? How do we catch these things as they're happening or before they're happening, but at least based on existing reporting systems? And how is the information flowing in analyzed and or filtered automatically to prioritize these things? Now, politically, we're with this resolution, we're saying that we will start with that which we own or influence. And we're doing that for political reasons. And I guess that is a pilot in a way. And you've mentioned now that this is actually the work of pilot. You didn't get into any details, so I don't know that, but I trust you. I mean, this has been done in other places. I'm a little concerned. It'd be great in the next 6 months. If we're going to do that, that's one thing. But I would also just like to know the top 10 places, top 20 places, just like I keep an eye on the top 25 most dangerous intersections in the city. If there are 25 places in the city that are SEPTEP vulnerable, you know, they're criminally vulnerable, or public safety vulnerability is based on environmental design, whether it's public or private, I'd like to know that.
By the way, I just want to clarify one thing. There's some people in the housing community that have pushed back, and you've engaged them. And for me, the decision to go on a limited basis with, as Commissioner Adams said, properties that we own or influence, is not a quote-unquote political decision. It's based on the notion that to change the code as applicable to private sector, to non-public housing, I think I understand you say it would take a couple of years to go through that process. So, in effect, by applying these rules to that which we influence through our funding, we are, in effect, getting a pilot program for the first couple of years. And I view that less – I just want to be clear because there's some people who are concerned about the politics of this. I view that less as a political decision and one about a timing question, and that you've made the argument that let's try it here on things we influence for a couple of years and then – migrate to properties that are privately funded, but which would require a more elaborate process of changing the code. Is that
absolutely?
But
absolutely.
I would. And my understanding is we could apply this to the private sector within 6 to 8 months. We are politically piloting it on our own property first, showing, and that's politically by leading by example and others. But I would like to know what private sector only. Places, vulnerable places out there, SEPTEP places are out there that we would apply to it next. I'm assuming that this will not just apply to publicly owned or influenced dangerous places. I'm interested, I think the council is interested in going after the dangerous places and relieving our officers of repeat calls for service unnecessarily.
When I was at Southeast Precinct, we ran calls for service information for the most recurrent calls for service locations. At that time, the number one location was Providence Hospital, and it was because of a car problem in their parking structure, and so we worked on that. The second one was Laurelhurst Park, and so we worked with the Park Bureau and Crime Prevention to do remediation from a SEPTED standpoint on the park in terms of trimming shrubbery, and there had been a kind of a party location on the park that was mitigated. So there's good work to be done. Generally, the people we work with are compliant, and we can certainly look at those that aren't and then also examine the reasons why they're not.
Thank you. Good.
Further questions? Jeremy?
I was just going to ask if there were further questions, so if there's not, thank you very much.
Would you like to ask?
Okay. Visions of turkey dancing.
How many folks do we have signed up to testify?
We have two people signed up.
Would you please call their names?
If Marlena Lutino and Rachel Russell would come on up.
The 10th most dangerous place that's been reported is the Saltzman. It's a late night.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record, and you each have 3 minutes. Anyone can begin.
Okay. So my name is Marlea Lutino, and I'm the asset manager with Catholic Charities. And I wanted to thank you for the opportunity to testify on crime prevention through environmental design resolution. I'm here to testify on behalf of the Oregon Opportunity Network. It's a statewide network of over 40 affordable housing providers and owners in the state of Oregon. Our members consider security an essential part of the responsible stewardship of affordable housing and maintaining vibrant communities. We would like to recognize Mayor Potter for the unprecedented resources that he has put forward to support affordable housing within the city of Portland. We wholeheartedly applaud his efforts and thank him for his role in our successes. We wish him the best as he transitions out of public life. In general, Oregon On is supportive of the SEPTED resolution and the aim of its principles. Some of our members already incorporate SEPTED principles into their developments. As one example, Rose CDC seeks Office of Neighborhood Environmental, seeks Office of Neighborhood Involvement Crime Prevention Coordinator review as part of the design development process for every project they complete. Our members had initial concerns with an early iteration of the SEPTED draft resolution. We believe our concerns have been addressed. We are therefore posing no opposition to this resolution going forward. As affordable housing providers and owners, we are disciplined in using language that avoids reinforcing a stereotypic belief that low-income people are more likely to engage in criminal activity than moderate or high-income people. Some SEPTED principles will be exclusively applied to city-funded affordable housing. The general public could misconstrue the aim of the policy. We urge you to continue to promote positive language as the policy moves forward. Oregon On looks forward to assisting in SEPTED implementation so that we may spread these positive principles to other multifamily communities in Portland.
If I could just
sure.
ask you two points. One is, my understanding is this would apply to publicly funded multifamily housing, whether it's low income, market rate, or workforce. So that will partly address, I think, the concern. But we want to make it very clear that there, and it's an issue I raised with the panel before you, that there is no intent to stigmatize any particular group. And we'll continue to message that through what we do. But the second question I wanted to ask you has to do with Esperanza Court.
Oh, okay.
And I had the pleasure of joining you at the opening of that. And Esperanza Court is a state-of-the-art affordable housing development. Do you know offhand how much of the SEPTED principles were incorporated just as a matter of course in the design for that particular development?
My
guess is that it was heavily influenced by SEPTED. I mean, given the layout, the lighting, some of the intentional things that were done, my guess is it probably naturally incorporated much of it, but I was curious if you knew specifically.
I think most affordable housing developments, for example, do have those peepholes, so that wouldn't be such a hard thing to integrate into any new or existing properties, for example. As far as lighting and recesses, I don't know exactly. Actually, I think the person from PDC, Michael, do you know?
Most of it.
Yeah.
Well, and I just say, one thing that impressed me when we did the walkthrough
mm-hmm.
is that it is designed so that lots of people who live there become busybodies.
Yes, it's right on Powell, so it has it's on the bus line.
And if you're in your apartment or on your deck, you have a chance to look at common areas. You can observe the children's play structure. I mean, so you've got lots of eyes.
Yes.
On what's going on.
There's a central courtyard,
which I take it is part of the SEPTED principle. So, thank you.
Yes.
My name is Rachel Russell. I work for the Housing Authority of Portland. I've been there for 8 years. I just actually recently joined the public housing 1 year ago, and I just started a new position as an assistant property manager. And one of my primary roles is to work with the police and make our meetings with them maybe more cohesive. A lot of our site managers are very active in going to the different NRT and ONI meetings. So we want to continue with that. We also are in high support of the SEPTED resolution. We have been using John Campbell for trainings and have had our newer developments already implemented SEPTED, New Columbia, and most recently Humboldt Gardens. The Housing Authority is the largest provider of low-income housing in the county, obviously, and I think we're interested in doing that on even existing properties. We've started to have some SEPTED inspections. Some of the people in this room actually have evaluated some of our properties, some of it informally and some of it more formally. But we're very interested in support the policy. I'm going to read a little bit from some points that a coworker who was going to be here today gave to me. So the SEPTED principles addressed in the resolution are supported by HAP and have been implemented our new developments. Partnerships have been forged between Portland Police Bureau and the Office of Neighborhood Involvement and HAP staff, both for the development and real estate operation departments. We've actively participated in the enhanced safety pilot program in North Portland with Havila and engaged with John Campbell trainings. An important aspect of developing and operating affordable low-income and special needs housing is meeting the needs of the larger community without sacrificing the needs of the resident population being housed. The principles of SEPTED, as envisioned in this resolution, seek to balance SEPTED principles with livability and attendant operational and budget challenges. The resolution provides a framework for developing an implementation plan and administrative procedures that HAP believes will be fair and equitable. You had brought up a point about existing properties or having the Housing Authority take over a property that had issues. I think I speak correctly that we would be happy to remodel, revamp, or put the money into things to make it safer. That's the way our director has run and would continue to do. So we commonly take over projects that need quite a bit of work, but I think we're happy to invest in things that make it better livability for our residents. That's all.
Is that it?
That's all who signed up.
Okay. Further discussion? Please call a vote.
Adams?
Well, I want to thank you for a great presentation. Appreciate the discussion and the dialogue. I think there's a real opportunity here, and you have my commitment to keep at it. I want to thank the mayor for his work. That seminar you went to 30 years ago has really paid off. I think this is great. I think making the community safer at every opportunity we can, you know, reduce the calls for service is exactly what we should be doing. So thank you for your leadership. Happy Thanksgiving. Aye.
Fish.
I just want to warn my colleagues that Kate Allen helped me write some brief remarks. So if you want to call in for dinner, we can adjourn
now and come back, pages. Mayor. But
get more of those sandwiches.
Really, is this a filibuster? What is this?
So let me begin, if I could, Mayor, by thanking you. You have offered our city consistent leadership on quality of life and safety issues affecting residents regardless of income. And to Jeremy on your staff for his good work, to Stephen Fulton at BHCD, to Stephanie Reynolds, John Campbell, and to Maria Rubio, also known as Carmen's mom. I also want to thank our friends at the Housing Authority of Portland and the Oregon Opportunity Network who provided invaluable affordable housing community perspective on these issues. And I want to recognize that staff at ONI and the mayor's office worked diligently and collaboratively with the affordable housing industry to address their concerns, which I think is reflected in the fact that a representative of OON was here today to endorse this work. Our city has consistently led by example on housing issues, and recently our focus has broadened from affordability to housing safety issues. The mayor and this council strongly believe that every city resident should feel safe and secure at home, whether the home is an architect-designed modern home in Council Crest or an apartment in a multifamily development in Lentz. Last week, the Quality Rental Housing Work Group brought forward a set of recommendations reflecting a consensus of both industry and tenant representatives to kick up our complaint-initiated process several notches when there are repeated issues with basic housing health and safety matters, such as mold or exposed electrical wiring. Safety by design is another set of tools to address the safety and well-being of our residents. Our nonprofit community partners have been admittedly ahead of the curve on many of the SEPTEB recommendations, such as voluntarily installing lightings in the projects they develop to give all tenants a feeling of safety on the premises. By implementing basic safety by design principles in the development of every other affordable housing project, the city and its community partners can continue to play a national leadership role in the development and management of multifamily housing. Now, as with any set of recommendations as complex as these, the devil lives in the details. And I want to thank the mayor and staff for the commitments they've made in terms of the next phase, which is working out the rules and the regulations and the opportunity to have that come back before council for us to review. We are in tough economic times, and there are probably tougher economic times ahead. We in government must take care to balance what we ask of our community partners with the level of support we're prepared to give them. We appreciate that the affordable housing industry is willing to embrace SEPTEB design elements, and I think it's incumbent on the council to work in good faith to ensure that they can live with the final policies and procedures as applied. Now, the administrative policy and procedure development will be led by ONI because of its special expertise, but I'm pleased that we'll include full participation by BHCD, PDC, and BDS. In my judgment, the final policies and procedures must be clear, non-intrusive, and cost-effective. And they must not impose new layers of compliance and reporting significantly above and beyond what is currently required. In light of our severe shortage of affordable housing, the final policies and procedures must not inhibit the development process, nor is that the intent. And the resolution, I think, correctly includes a waiver provision that may be employed to make sure that is not the case. The final policies and procedures should include provision for an evaluation of SEPTEB as it is applied after we have a year of experience under our belt, and we should look to see if we have achieved the goals that SEPTEB laid out. Long-term savings of city resources through easier property management, reduced calls for service, and increased safety and livability for property residents and visitors. This is the goal of SEPTEB, and the evaluation would be an ideal time to address any ambiguities or implementation issues that may have arisen. Again, I'd like to thank all those who have worked diligently on these recommendations, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to thank the group for coming up with this recommendations. It reminds me a lot of our city green building policy, which also applies only to city-owned facilities or, in the case of PDC, city finance facilities, although we do have discussions ongoing about how do we, you know, do we take this further. So anyway, I'm struck by the analogy, but I think this is a good place to start, and it sounds like SEPTED is a proven item in increasing people's public safety and their perception of safety. And so we look forward to seeing how this unfolds in the next 6 months and come back to us with some rules that will work for everybody. But I think this is a great step forward, and I want to thank Mayor Potter as well. And I know Mayor Potter has a turkey to spare at 4 o'clock, so I don't want to talk too much longer.
You do?
But it's skipping, yeah, stay of execution for a turkey.
Stay of execution.
That's amazing.
So anyway, this turkey? I'm pleased about it.
Potter.
Well, I want to thank the committee, too, because it really has been a labor of love. You folks, I know, started out much larger, and we've narrowed down. But I think that by testing it out at this size, we can learn a lot from it and learn how to apply it, as Commissioner Adams said, to some of those problem areas that not only are repeat calls for the police, but all for greater security for our community. And so I think this is a great first step. And I will be sitting in my armchair watching Channel 30 to see what the next step will be. And I really do look forward to this. It has been a long time coming, and I'm very appreciative of that work. And John Campbell, although you're a hired gun, we really appreciate your work, because I know, having known you for 20-some years, that you do it because you believe in it. And in this particular case, we've had a lot of good discussions. Some may say arguments, but they're discussions. And I think that it's been a good product. And finally, I want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. And tomorrow, when you're sitting with your respective families or friends, think about those who aren't as fortunate. And over the coming months, we're going to have more of those folks in our community. We have 117,000 children that go to bed hungry every night. I think that we need to also move to action and make sure that as we are thankful, that we can provide the opportunities to others to be thankful as well. So thank you folks for being here. Enjoy Thanksgiving, and I really appreciate the good work. I vote aye. We're adjourned. Do we have a Thursday council?
No.
Okay, we're adjourned until next week.
That's Thanksgiving.
That is, that is Thanksgiving.
We get tomorrow off, I think.
Yeah. Well, I'll come in if you come in.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
You know, with Vera now going back to work for the Gallup, you might be the only former.
Yeah.